for just about everything for the outdoors. Go to MidwayUSA.com.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Ooh, buddy, we can almost smell that Christmas dinner from here, y'all. Merry Christmas to all of our grinders out there. Hope you got plenty of blessed family time and plenty of goodies for the next elk season. But in case you didn't, we're going to be a good partner and share ours. On tonight's show, me and the crew share our elk hunting gifts and lessons, our insights, muffs, nuggets, and greatest gains from the 2022 elk seasons. So, my friends, pull up a chair, adjust your volumes just right, and welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting.
Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting, brought to you by ElkGrows.com, with your host, Gilbert Ornelas, and elk hunting coach, Joe Gilley. You want to hunt elk, and they live to hunt elk. Their goal is to share with you what they have learned grinding it out for over 35 seasons, doing what they love. So come on into camp and set a spell. Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunters.
Hello there, everyone. If it's your first time with us, glad to have you. Hope you enjoy our show. And as always, for those blue-collar hunters following us and grinding it out with us every week, welcome back to Elk Camp. I'm Gilbert Ornelas, the host of your show, coming to you from Spring, Texas. And joining us tonight, we've got the whole Elk Bros crew with us. That's right. We've got the Venezuelan Mafia in the house, Mr. Luis Gonzalez and Manano Gratiron. We've got the Silver Tongue Devil himself, the newest one of our Elk Bros hunting coaches, Mr. Guy Duplanchet's in the house. We got the legend, R.C. Knox from Cuesta, New Mexico. And we've got our elk hunting coaches from Cimarron, New Mexico. WWJGD is in the house. And the ninja, Mr. Leroy Chavez, in the house. Hey, boys, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
You can tell from that intro, man, Gilbert's feeling festive, eh?
Absolutely. Five drinks in, Joe.
Oh man. It's so cool, guys, because yeah, everybody knows we record this show a little bit early. So we're just ahead of Christmas and the show is going to come out, I think, 2 days after Christmas. So we just wanted to wish everybody out there a Merry Christmas. And with that, you know, we get to do our thing together, get to have some time together. We got to do something where all of our families get together sometime, man.
Agreed. Christmas in Vegas or something.
Christmas in Vegas. I don't know, man. Here in New Mexico, yeah. you tell them you're going to change tradition. We got to do like Christmas in April or something.
Yeah. Hey, man, they have to follow our lead, Joe. They'll be all right. Don't worry. Yeah. Just break it on them.
Yeah.
This is what we're doing.
So who's going to be hunting around Christmas and who's going? Yeah.
Oh, I'll be hunting tomorrow.
Going up. What are you chasing?
Deer.
Deer.
Yeah.
Yeah, Manano's got some big ones, man. I'm telling you. I got to spend a week with them. Well, a few days last week with them up there in Oklahoma. And I'm telling you what, man, they've got some giants walking the earth up there. Lots of pigs, but, big old got the grunt tube out and started grunting, and them deer come rolling out of the woodwork.
And what happened, Beto? Did you ventilate one?
I did. I ventilated one of them. A perfect one, man. I let all the big ones go so Manano and Luis could shoot them. And I shot one that was barely on his last leg, man.
How far did he go?
He didn't go 50 yards. I watched him fall over dead as a hammer. I mean, one of them bad Luis Gonzalez pills, buddy. I'm telling you. So we got some video content on that. I did not get the shot simply because I was not prepared to. Well, what happened was when I called that buck in, I was not able to get my phone up and put it on the side of that blind, right? So we didn't get the shot, but I got the recovery. I got the hero part, the whole nine yards. So y'all get to see that pretty soon. I gave it to Luis, and I know my brother's been busy doing the work thing, but I promise you he's got video that he'll be producing here, and it's going to be stellar, man.
I don't know when you guys work, dude. Every time I see, man, I'm getting pictures from a blind.
This is our time of the year, but we got some stuff, funny stuff too, that happened to Big O as well. They thought it'd be real funny to put me in a box blind and let me shoot out the window of a box blind and everything. Yeah. Well, we found out how tough one of them Luis Gonzalez arrows. And listen, I got to tell you, my boy down there, Guy Duplanche, sent out a recommendation first part of the year on a little broadhead named Cayuga. That's a bad mofo.
Yeah, let me tell you.
Not only are they bad mofos on animals, they bad mofos on blind windows too. At the end of the day, but still ready to rock and roll, sharp as ever, and we can keep
Let me clarify. We're talking metal windows.
Yeah, metal window, son.
Oh, no. Sure.
Yeah.
When I hit that
thing, dude, sparks flew and the whole blind acted like an eruption.
It went about 6 foot ball above the pig. Oh, yeah. But guess what? He maintained a straight line. It just went.
It did. It didn't kick out one way or the other, man. It just hit the window, and it could have been a pretty dangerous situation.
Several malfunctions, but he came out. He came out victorious. Yeah. He sat on one of them little chairs I have in them pop-up blinds.
Dude, it cratered like a cheap suit, buddy. I mean, fell clean over backwards. I had a deer try to stick his head in the blind with me, dude, like Bullwinkle. Come walked right up to the blind and stuck his head in there like that, man. I'm like, what in the world is going on here, man? They got some of the coolest setups up there in Oklahoma, man. Guy, you'll have to come down and join us, man. It's a neat place. We got to see all of it. I'm telling you, every inch of that we got to walk, right? So, because these old boys here shooting hogs and shooting deer, we shot
the biggest hog.
You did.
That we've ever shot in that place. Manano smoked it. 237 pounds.
Ooh, that's a big one there, boy.
That's a big hog. You know, a lot of guys tell, I shot a 300 or 400 pounder. Come on, man. I mean, you just don't get that big in the wild. Now,
you just don't have a tripod with the thing to weigh it to really tell.
Some guys, you know, pigs that are around agriculture and that have been neutered and stuff like that, they'll get bigger. But these wild boars and stuff, they just don't get much bigger than 220 pounds. I mean, this was a huge monster.
And Gilbert, man, we had some fellas on our podcast.
Yeah.
Not too long ago, talking about a broadhead, and we really grilled those boys, man.
Put them through the
really
ringer.
Just, you know, really ask them about it and talk about the proof in the pudding. And you purchased some of those broadheads, and you've been using them, right?
I did. And you know, so look, these boys didn't send me anything free or anything like that. I actually spent my own hard-earned money. And look at the size of them.
Look at the coloration on that.
Isn't that cool?
Hey, that's a badass pig.
So he's having him shoulder-mounted, guys. So it's going to be super proud of Manano. So these cats call me the night they stick this pig, right? And they're like, Beto, you need – I'm in South Texas. Just got done cooking on two rigs and everything. They're like, you need to come up here and come join us. And I said, all right, y'all get ready. I'm coming. They're like, I'm like, I'm coming. And they're like, yeah, but that's like 8 or 9 hours. I said, y'all be ready. I'll be there about 8 o'clock in the morning. And, man, I put it in the wind, had to catch me a nap somewhere between Bowie and South Texas, but I caught me a little nap and I was there by the time they got up in the morning to mess with that hog. So, it was a fun trip, man. Anytime you're with these cats, you're going to have a big time. They're going to feed the shit out of you. They're going to make you throw up in the middle of the night because you ate too damn much. I said, well, I could stay in South Texas and hunt by myself and go see the same old deers and stuff. Like, I'm trying to find some deers for my kids when they come in from college. And I said, I could go spend some real quality time with some of my brothers. So I pointed that big four to my north and here we went, man. So
that's awesome, dude.
We had a blast, but I wanted to tell, to get back to what Joe said. The guys from Tooth of the Arrow Broadheads came on our podcast and, you know, they're a new company starting out, American company. And, you know, I always want to support American products, American made, and I want to do that. So I didn't ask them to send me anything or anything like that. I just reached out and ordered some broadheads from, ordered S series and V series, ordered 125s and 150s. Wanted to see which one I like better. And I shot that deer with a 150 S series. And I'm telling you right now, brother, it knocked a big hole in that big Oklahoma whitetail. And this Oklahoma whitetail was a horse, man. I mean, it's a really mature buck and
big buddy size.
It did. It did exactly what I wanted it to do. And, we're going to move a little step further and move on to hogs and see how they do, man. But I'm hoping to have these guys like in my quiver next elk season. And I know Cole, our brother Cole Wilkes did kill his bull this year with one of the Tooth of the Arrow broadheads. So I'm pretty impressed with his, if you go to his YouTube site and check out what he did with the Tooth of the Arrow broadhead and him shooting through shoulder blades and antler horns and all kinds of things, you know, I think it's going to be a viable head. They build it out of one piece of solid carbon steel. And I think it's going to be a real viable option, for us going forward. And look, you can look in my quiver right now. I got 5 different broadheads in there because I want to see what I'm liking. You know, I got Kudu, I got Cayuga, I got Muzzy Trocar, I got a Wasp, Havlon, I got, what else, Luis? The Tooth of the Arrow and Cayuga.
Try the Tooth of the Arrow, right?
Yeah. The Tooth of the Arrow broadhead. So, you know, this is a target rich environment we got down here in South Texas. So we're going to put them all together.
I think a good point to make about that though, bro, is like you said, you got all those different broadheads on these arrows, but all these broadheads are all hitting the same place. And
there's a reason for that. That man right there at the bottom of the screen, Mr. Luis Gonzalez, he builds such a good arrow that is tuned, knock tuned, shaft tuned, and then broadhead tuned. And I'm telling you, when I shoot it out of that Matthews Helium of mine, and look, my bow's old. It ain't new. That bow's, you know, 8-10 years old. But I'm telling you, it's bad medicine when you put the right things together. It's just like, you know, when you're shooting a rifle and you go to hand loads and you're working up a load for your rifle. It's just, it performs a lot better. These arrows, don't matter what you screw on the end of it, they fly like a dart, you know, and there's no wasted energy. And and you ask Luis, we've intentionally made shots that aren't really the right shot to make on these big hogs and stuff to make
kind
to
of punch
see
shoulders.
What, to see what we can do, right? Yeah. And some of it's worked out, and some of us taught us that it don't matter what we put on the end of it, that hog's plate is just impenetrable, man. I mean, Luis shot one the other day with a dadgum 700 grain arrow or something like that, and man, no bueno. I mean, he shook it off like a bad case of the fleas, you know?
Really? So, wasn't that a opposite side, though? I mean, it punched first side, but stuck opposite side?
No, this was, I think he's talking about a hog last year. It was massive. And this one is probably bigger than the one Manana shot. This is in like Corpus Christi area. Undisclosed location.
Yeah.
And he was quartering towards, and I purposely shot him kind of, I was trying to shoot him between the shoulder and the neck, but my shot went a little bit to the left and I hit that
shoulder, not,
that knuckle. Shoulder. Yeah. But the, like the big
plate,
plate knuckle. I don't know.
It just, that knuckle right there.
It's super hard bone. The only thing that arrow didn't have, it was a single bevel broadhead, but the rest of it was a very heavy arrow. And yeah, man, it probably penetrated 4 inches and went.
Have you guys noticed with the older bores that the scar tissue adds to?
Absolutely. That's what we're saying. It has, they have this plate, and the one Manano killed this weekend, that plate was probably close to 2 inches thick.
More, bro.
Yeah. It was like, and you know, like another thing is we just found that depending on where you hit these animals is so important. Luis shot a deer this past weekend with a single bevel, and he shot him up high in the shoulders and it did not go all the way through. And I mean, Luis shoots a 600 and something grains. So
went through the first, but didn't go through the second.
Right.
It jammed on the second shoulder.
That doesn't usually happen, man. Usually,
I thought that was 6 inches, Joe.
Damn it! What in the world?
Take that, Joe. Take that.
It was very evident that when you hit heavy bone, even when you've got everything in your favor, a lot of times it don't work out. You know.
Yeah. So. Sometimes even Plan B.
Yeah. So we go back to everybody that talks about bow hunting. It's all about shot placement.
Absolutely, man. That's why it's so critical, man, to be able to get that in.
And then having an arrow that performs when you put it in that shot placement.
You know, the one thing that I take away from that more than anything is the fact that you guys are out and you're exploring the options and you're tinkering and you're messing around with the setup. And getting that learned experience, right? I think as archery hunters, we tend to get a little bit scared about, you know, setting back in and I got to resight and I got to do, but that's part of it, right?
Sure.
And as you advance, and then I think and correct me if I'm wrong, Luis, but I think that's kind of what spawned this little bit of, besides the engineer brain, this passion in Luis to build the arrows and, you know, to see what's possible.
The failures.
Yeah, it's a huge deal.
The failures is what sprung it, right? I mean, just tired of not getting the results I was expecting, right? And trying to understand what was going on and trying to get my head wrapped around it. And look, it continues to happen. I tell people it's like this, it keeps you, this sport keeps you so humble, man. I mean, even when you think that you're super confident with the arrow set up and the bow set up and the shot that you place, you know, it has a way to remind you. It's like, not today.
Yeah. I want to say another thing that this year's really taught me. I didn't get to shoot a lot last year because of my injury, right? So normally, man, I'm pretty polished. Well, this year I'm finding, and look, my son's the one who brought it to my attention. And then Luis did too, when they were watching me shoot in the video. I'm not patient. I'm letting that arrow go way too quick. Right. And, from draw to finish. And for me, man, that's been like my bread and butter. I've always been a patient bow hunter. Wait for that animal to get just right. Send it when I know it's in the right spot. Right now. And I tell you the reason why I've rushed a couple of times, because I've been at full draw for a long time and I'm still not back to 100% strength when I'm holding that thing back. And I was probably held on that buck I shot in South Texas. I probably held on him 2 minutes. I mean, it's a long time, you know, when you're holding that thing back. Yeah. And then when he walked back in and he barely stopped, man, I was like, you know, I let it go anyway. And I was just not patient enough, right? And then when I look back at the shot I made this weekend or this past weekend when I was with Luis and them, I had all day. I drew my bow, painted my name on the side of that sucker, settled it in where I wanted it to be. He had his head down eating, and I'm like, okay, I'm not going to shoot him with his head down. I'm going to let him get his head back up. And that big 10 point walked in behind him. And when the big 10 walked in, he lifted his head up and turned his head away, and poof, I sent it then. And
so just I know this is an elk hunting deal here, But tell everybody why you waited for that head to come up, bud.
So whitetail and most all animals, when you're in between that number one, that window between 22 and 35 yards, that's where they can really react the best, right? When you're inside of 20, most of our bows nowadays fly between 240 and 300 feet per second. They can't really react as fast, 20 and in. Anything 22 into 35, they really can react a lot. And they, when their heads are down, their bodies are in a position where they can really go lower. As soon as they react, everything goes down further. I mean, drop a foot. When their head's up, they got to get their body down to go lower. So whitetails, mule deer, anything that's got, you know, think of it as a lever.
Think of it as a lever.
It's like action reaction type thing,
right? The head is down. It's a lot easier for me to do this that if my head is up here, for me to drop the whole arm is more difficult. So the head serves as the fulcrum, you know, you bring the head up as I bring my body down. It helps me duck a lot easier than if I'm fully standing up and trying to now bring the whole body down. You're only depending on gravity. You don't have leverage.
Yeah, we've actually seen that on video. We've seen when the animal's head is down, and when they hear the noise, as they throw it up, it inversely makes their bodies drop, go down. Whereas when the head is up, it's a whole, because they're just trying to get ready to move, and it's a whole lot harder for them to get. It's just like a sprinter, man.
Yeah, you know,
a sprinter in a down position or a lineman in football in a down position can explode, and move their body. Whereas, to your point, in track,
When they're getting ready to sprint, where are their heads and their hands? They're on the ground, right?
And then they just take off running.
None of them takes off running standing up.
Correct.
No, and it's the same thing with the animals that are on four legs. I mean, elk don't tend to drop; they pivot. They tend to pivot in their motion, right? But you, if you watch enough elk hunting videos, you will see them pivot down with their head down. If their head is down, the problem is 90% of the time when the elk walks in, he don't have his head down. He's got his head up and he's looking, right? Or when you cow call to them, they're going to turn broadside. Deer are not like that. They're feeding and all kinds of other things. So for us, it's really important for us to wait, be patient on that right time. And that's another thing is when we looked at Luis and Manano this past weekend, their shots on those deer, they were a little rushed. They weren't settled, right? And when you rush something in bow hunting, generally it's not going to turn out good.
And speaking of body behavior, because you brought it up with the elk, for our listeners out there, bull elk, when they're coming in, have a little fake move that they make, and they do it to be able to identify if there's a predator close to them. And what they'll do is they'll go down like they're feeding and never start feeding. They're just going down looking for movement. And if they catch
white-tail
something, boom.
The white-tail is the exact same thing.
You bet. Yeah.
So, you know, that's something for you to be aware of. If you come in, you see an elk start just sticking its head down, that doesn't mean that it's getting ready to hide. It's actually looking, you know, to see.
Yeah. Now, we've had a great off season of hunting, that's for sure, as far as not hunting elk. You know, it's been awesome. I know Guy's been doing some deer hunting up there in Colorado.
Guy, congrats, man. That was awesome.
Congrats on you.
And so what are you going to hunt next, dude? Because you said
I went and got I got a fur bearer permit, so go hunt some bobcat, and then I went and took my mountain lion test, so I got a mountain lion tag. That's a long tag too, man. It goes until I think March 31st.
That's really cool.
So I'm gonna go and chase one with my bow for a while, and you know, see what I could do.
Luis, how about you get this party started and head over to our Elk Bros mailbox, brother?
Sure, man. So we got Mr. Justin Baker from San Diego, California. He says, "What's up, bros? Thanks for all you fellas do. Love listening every chance I get. Here's my question. On one of your shows, I heard you say you often use low audible elk sounds. Why and when do you use them? And do elk respond with the same sounds to let you know they are coming in?"
Okay, so let's break this down, man, because it's like He said that we often say we use low audible elk sounds. So he's talking about what? He's talking about
little calf calls and little cow calls.
Well, and
runs, rakes, clubs, swine,
winds, raking. Right. So we're using those low audible sounds and even mews, those types of things. And when we're thinking about loud sounds, you know, we're generally talking about location type bugles and different things where people are ridge running. But one of my favorite things to do, even, man, this year, just chuckle. That little,
just yes. That, the little chuckle, dude.
Just that little chuckle, man. Low audible level chuckle.
Yeah.
And so he says, why and when do you use them, and do elk respond with the same sounds to let you know they're coming in? So, yes and no on that second part there, I would say.
Season depending as well?
Animal depending, situation dependent.
Yeah, you know, RC had us get ready. I didn't hear it, but we were up on the side of the ridge, and sure enough, we had a bull that came in, but he heard something that was very low audible sounding, right? I didn't hear it, but RC picked up on it, and I don't know if the bull was glunking or he just heard him kind of moving through the brush, but he heard it before I did. He goes, get ready. He goes, that sucker's coming right now, you know? And I have picked up on what RC hears, right? And he was right. You know, we had him clinking in them rocks down below us, and then he heard him wind his horns through the cedar branches. And that's very low sounding, but man, yeah, they give themselves away, and you'll hear them do that little grunt when they're coming, you know? They'll kind of, it's not a chuckle, but it's more like a, you know, and here they come. You know, this year, Joe, that's how I knew that bull was coming down to us when you called him in. He never did bugle or anything, but he went just like that. And I mean, that's the only sound he made, but very, very low sounding, guttural, you know. And man, I was like, what is that? And I looked up, and man, here come Bullwinkle down through the timber, you know. So yeah, they use a lot of low sounds. And for me, I think when you're around pressured elk, the low sounds sometimes are better than the big, bold sounds, you know?
I agree.
100%
agree. There's some places. So, Guy, why and when do you use them?
You know, for me, it's been when the pressure is on. Yeah. When the woods get full and you got, you know, six or seven trucks parked within 200 yards and everybody jumps out and they're on the bugle tube and they're piping off, man, the elk tend to want to shut up a little bit. They get wary. And in our camp, when we were at Adventures Camp, when me and Mike were out, man, we heard four, five, six, just real low whines, you know, like, I'm here, you know, 50, 60 yards off. But it's, for me, it's really been when the pressure cranks up is where I see, it come into play, and you get more of a response on those low audibles. And I love them. I mean, something like raking, you know, but I'll caveat it. If you're going to rake, you better have a dang good setup.
No
dang
doubt.
Dang good setup.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and
yeah, you know, I'll go back to when Larry and I were taking a nap, Joe, and I heard something kicking around in front of me. I was like, bear. And I opened my eyes up. I'm like, man, it's got to be a bear making that kind of racket coming up. And I looked up, and there's a mane 35 yards, a big dark elk mane walking up. There's three bulls walking up, right? Well, I couldn't just raise up and go, Larry, bull. You know what I mean? We blow the whole setup. So I got to let them walk by me, right? And then get Larry up. I have to throw a big old log over there and hit Larry while he's asleep. And it woke him up. And I said, bull, bull. And I was pointing over in that direction. He looked over there and he goes, oh, wow. So he rolls over, gets his stuff ready, and then I got to let him get on past before I try to call him back. Well, I couldn't just go, yeah. I mean, I'd have scared the dog shit out of those bulls, right? So, man, I just pointed my mouth down just as low as I could get to the ground and, yeah, like it was a long way off, you know? And I just started doing something really low. Man, next thing you know, they got their heads up and they're looking around and they just beelined it straight back to us, right? But if you jump up there and holler a bugle or a big loud cow call, they're right on top of you, you know? So it really takes you finessing things to get them to respond, you know?
Yeah. And when he asks why and when, you know, that's like, Luis said, it sometimes depends on the season.
Yeah.
You know, what he's saying is basically early season, a lot of those elk are really quiet early season, right? There's a lot of bull mews, you know, that are taking place. There's a lot of raking taking place. There's a lot of things where bulls let each other know where they are. There's another bull in the country in there as well. But I think a lot of people, if you talk to a lot of people, everybody said, well, that early season rolled really long this year, man. Because, I mean, we were in what we particularly – I mean, we were late season, and we still had bulls that were, you know, that were just using low chuckles, you know, once they were – what I would call like contact chuckles, I mean, where they were feeling things out. And another thing that they'll do low level is – and people don't realize that they hear a mew, and they think that's a cow elk coming into them. Bull and it's mew. A bull out coming in, and it's just sometimes this is the smallest sound in mew that you'll hear when they do that, you know, with each other. So I think really myself, I think the low level audible sounds, and where I worry about this is when you make people think that if they do just a rake or if they do just a low chuckle or if they do, you know, there's no like silver bullet. You know, you got to take a look at the situation, and sometimes it's for us, you know, we always talk about scenario calling. There's times when, yes, you want to sound like a single animal, but there's times when we want to sound like multiples. So we'll use low level audible sounds for that, whether it's a couple of cow mews and then sounding like a bull raking in the area. Things that why I use it is so that other bulls are not able to identify how big I am as a bull, if I'm going to introduce a bull. As soon as, if I'm doing cow calls, I want to stay with cow calls unless the situation defines that I've got to introduce a bull. Let's say that bull is hanging up. Me and Luis talked about this years ago, man. If a bull's hanging up and he doesn't want to come any further, sometimes it's because he's calling that cow to him and the cow's not coming. So we have to introduce a reason as to why that cow's not coming. So I'm going to introduce a bull. I want to scream a bugle to do that? No, because now either I'm going to match with him or he's going to think he's a bull that can match with me.
You just want to call that cow.
Yeah. 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 I just want to bring that booger. So I want to identify that there's a bull there, but not give away how big that bull is. And I can do that with raking. I can do that with just a little short chuckle. There's no way of identifying that. Or the demeanor, really, of that bull. Is that bull displaying because that other bull made a noise or for that cow? And when they hear that, that interests him in what's going on in that elk situation.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a straight-up invitation.
You know.
Yeah. Now, I have seen when bulls respond screaming at another bull, that they'll follow up with a chuckle like that.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, yeah. So, I read that and I'm like, okay, is he like screaming at those girls that I'm the man and stay here with me? I don't know. But, you know, I've definitely seen that as well. But I think the low level stuff is not the same old rodeo. It's different than what these animals are hearing all along the ridges all the time. What they're seeing when they bust a hunter, when they're screaming. And here's what a lot of hunters do too. And it's a huge mistake. And it's a hard one not to do is that if you are in a situation where the wind's in your face, sun's at your back, and you startle an animal and they go off, yes, cow call, stop that animal. But if you're in a situation where all of a sudden that wind caught off and a animal starts blowing out, a bull starts blowing out of there, a cow starts blowing out of there, and you cow call at them, you've just educated them. So there's a lot of times when this is happening, guys are screaming those bugles, animals are smelling them, and they're relating that. So to change up the situation is very, very effective. This year, when I killed my bull, why did I use low level? Because I had been following a herd, not making a noise, just tracking their tracks.
Nothing, Joe.
Keep going, Joe. Yep. You got it.
We know who heard it.
took me a while, but I got it now.
Joe, can I jump in? So, you know, Justin, what I would say with everything that Joe said, you know, and the other guy said, you know, dip your toe in the water, brother. If you're wondering when the perfect time to use that is, add them to your repertoire and dip your toe in the water, and you can see what's effective for you and how it works. I mean, it's going to be a better education, in my opinion. But I think, yeah, it should definitely be in your repertoire, and it shouldn't be something you're scared to use. And then what's right is when it works. You know what I mean? And you don't know until you
sometimes
blow that
call. You got to get in the bag of tricks, the whole bag.
The more
you got to go in the
elk,
whole bag.
The more you're in elk and experience them doing this stuff, the easier it is for you to pull from it and to do
stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we couldn't get real loud on Tom's bull either because the area we were in was so limited. So I just told him, hey man, we're going to throw out a few little calls and just let them marinate. We're not going to be loud, you know. Just gonna barely cow call. And once that bull left twice, the only way to get him back, little low chuckle, man. You know, and he had to come back to see what was
up.
And
they don't always let you know they're coming. Other than you might hear their foot on a rock or a branch break or something like that. Sometimes they're coming in silent.
Sometimes they can be very quiet, man. They'll be on top of you. You won't even know it.
If you're putting on a scenario, you better have an area. If you're doing a scenario, you better have an area.
An area.
An area notch.
I sound like I'm fighting.
I'm area notch. Cause ask me a notch how that works.
Yeah.
2 years in a row. 2 years in a row, we ain't got an area notch, right? Yep. The bull I killed in Colorado, he walked in on us. I mean, silent as a lamb. Never made a sound, walked in there on us, and I happened to turn to my right, and he's looking right at us. I'm like, oh, God, boys, don't move. There's a bull walking in, and they're like, huh? I'm like, right there to our right, man, right over here. There's a bull walking. They're all like, oh, we're videotaping ducks in the pond. You know, I mean, it is they can come in, and they don't make a lot of sound.
Yeah. Yeah. They came in to Manano when he was taking a dump and waved high.
It should do like
all right, Gil. That's our cue, man. Move us on.
It should do like Elk Bros Gil quote shirts or something. You know, silent as a lamb, smack in the face like a whoopee pop or something.
We went down to Trenage.
Yeah, Trenage.
A one-legged wooden Indian on an Elk Bros shirt.
You know what time it is, right?
What time is it, Gil?
Time for the Elk Bros shout-out. If you're new to our show, this shout-out to our followers in a few cities with the most listeners topping our charts this week, Joe.
Yep, first up, a shout-out to Big Bubba Bowden. I believe that. Would that be Bowden?
It's Big Bubba Bodine.
Bodine, okay.
Bodine.
For his review on Apple Podcasts, Bubba, not only did we appreciate your kindness, bud, but you happened to give that review on my birthday.
Yay.
So, yeah, man. So do me a favor. Send me your info to joe@elkbros.com because you were so nice. Give us a gift. I'd like to give you a gift to celebrate that. And we're going to set you up with a one-year subscription to our academy.
Wow.
Cap, and a grinder elk diaphragm, bud. So,
away Santa Claus, man. Look, you got the hat on and everything.
Hey, I got the hat on, man.
Hey, all right.
Talk about the right timing right there.
Bubba. Yeah. Mr. Bodine, we appreciate you giving us a review, brother. Thank you
absolutely,
so much.
Absolutely, man. All y'all, man, if you take time and give us those ratings and reviews, it means a lot to us. So now for our top cities. Our number one top listening city this week was founded in 1869 and was once the site of the Missouri Confederate Soldiers' Home. After the last Confederate veteran died, the land was converted into a Confederate Memorial Cemetery with more than 40,000 Missourians buried there. After the Civil War, with immigrants fleeing their homeland for opportunity, the local German-American culture thrived here and throughout the state. And this is in Higginsville, Missouri.
Higginsville, Missouri, the middle of the United States. They got elk in Missouri, Joe.
Yes, sir.
Got elk in the Ozarks.
I got people sending me photos of elk in Kansas. I just did a post this morning
Unbelievable.
Congratulating Austin Prescorn for
brought it back to the 505, baby.
One of six people to hunt the first harvest, the first hunt, six tags in Virginia. And these are the first elk harvested since 1855 in that state, since before the Civil War. And
they brought them from Kentucky, didn't they, Joe?
They did, absolutely. Uh-huh. Which, man, that was a smart move because it's just, you know, not too far away from where that is. And those animals are kind of acclimated to that kind of country, built up resistance to those areas. Very, very smart when they did that. And started with 71 adults and four calves in 2012. And they now had their first hunt. Did a lottery system for three of the tags. They auctioned one of them. And Austin, his dad, actually won that tag in the auction, gave it to his son. And Austin Bull, his dad called that bull in Virginia with a Carlton cow call. And Austin shot it, and they just finished waiting the dry period, and Boone and Crockett scored it at 4.33 5/8.
Giant, wow. Dude. Giant bull. Wow. Rivals all states for the biggest bulls they've had.
That kid is tainted forever is the only problem I see with it. Yeah.
If y'all haven't seen it, go to our Instagram page and you can see it. I'm telling you, man.
Crazy,
beautiful bull.
Yeah.
Beautiful bull. And a guy's from Albuquerque, New Mexico, isn't he, Joe?
And what a great family. I mean, I know the Prescorns. I know Bo. I know Mason. I've met the family. Mason, is an incredible hunter himself. Mason hunts out of a motorized wheelchair. He has a debilitating disease that, makes it difficult for him to operate. And that kid hunts everything and anything he can. And he's phenomenal. Awesome. So, and Bo is just filling these boys' lives up with incredible memories. So, my hat's off to that whole family. It really is.
Congrats to them.
Chavez.
Okay. With nearly 2,000 acres of park, this city is known as Wisconsin's Park Place. The Rock River, many nearby lakes, parks, and recreational facilities offer a myriad of recreational opportunities throughout the year. The city was named after a local settler to the area after the Black Hawk War of 1832. And this is in Janesville, Wisconsin.
Janesville, Wisconsin. Anybody know, have any idea where Janesville is?
I don't. I hadn't been to Janesville.
It's in the state of Wisconsin.
Now we see why you lead that group, man.
Yeah. I mean, I just answer the question, man.
Well played, brother. Well played. All right. This city is named after a pub and inn standing strong since as early as 1840. On a swinging sign in front of the hotel is painted a red lion. The town's name is the most common name for a pub and originates from the time of King James I of Scotland, who declared that the red lion of Scotland will be displayed on all buildings of importance. Red Lion, Pennsylvania.
Red Lion.
Pennsylvania.
That's an incredible name for a pub in Minnesota. All kinds of places there. I bet they have some swinging pubs, man, if they've been going since 1840, man.
Any guesses where it is?
Not for me.
I know exactly where it's in Pennsylvania, bro.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, Guy, what's going on here?
Hey, brother, I'm following your lead, man. I'm just answering your questions.
Nobody's paying attention. There's going to be a test. What?
We are just dumbing down, man. That's all
we do. I'll take where is it for 400, please?
It's up in the northwest corner, man, just below New York, man.
Oh, okay.
For sure.
You imagine if the walls in a pub that's been around since 1840 could talk?
Wow.
I mean, man, oh, man.
Wow. If it could, somebody would probably burn the place down.
Yep. This city was originally named, is it Sturgis Falls? Sturgis Falls, after its first settler, and later named after a nearby river. Once the location to a Civil War soldier's orphan home. The site later became the first building on the campus of Northern Iowa University.
And for those hungry travelers heading through, there's nothing quite like an Iowa pork tenderloin, crispy and breaded to perfection.
Oh, man.
Cedar Falls.
One of my favorite meats.
Iowa. Man, my mouth got watery there.
Yeah. Yeah. Falls, Iowa.
Cedar Falls, thanks, y'all, man. Appreciate
it. Joe, I was wrong. That last city there, Red Line, is south in southern Pennsylvania below York.
Yeah, I was just getting an emergency phone call came in.
Yeah, I'm sure they're like, Northwest, that ain't right. So I wanted to make that,
all right, man.
Let y'all know that. Next up,
the mice?
You saw the mouse?
Yeah. He's sitting there.
He's standing on the table.
This is going to be my companion. I got this, Big O.
Okay.
Up next, this top listening city was first called Sanford. The city is an agricultural center and home to the nearby Hogaton Panhandle Gas Field, a popular attraction and an inductee into the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame, is a Pioneer Day Rodeo, one of the world's toughest, most extreme bull riding and bronc busting rodeos you have ever witnessed. And this is for Goimon. Goimon.
That's like my Jamaican name, man. Hey, my name is
Goimon, Oklahoma.
Goimon, Oklahoma.
Goimon, Oklahoma's in the panhandle of Oklahoma over there.
Now explain something to me. How come is it with that big nose of yours? It's like it doesn't work. You sound all like... I just want the listeners to understand. It has nothing to do with the audio. He's like... And his nose is covering half of the screen.
It's because he goes hum, bro. He's got hum.
Yeah. Look, Guymon is a really cool town.
Guymon.
You know, when you're in Guymon, you're an hour and 20 minutes from five different states. You could be in Colorado, you could be in New Mexico, you could be in Kansas, or you can be in Texas. And of course, Oklahoma. At five states, you can be in an hour and 20 minutes.
Guy, is that your full name? Did you just shorten it up?
We're on blue collar. I can't say what I was about to
say. catch me outside, baby.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm going to leave it alone.
Poking the bear, man. Poking the bear. All right, dudes, let's get this party started, man. We got a lot to do here because the whole idea of this, like I said, guys, is our idea as our Christmas celebration. We want to give gifts to our listeners and viewers out there. And by sharing those insights, those lessons that we learned, either from things that went wrong that we learned on, things that went right for us, special things that really started to snap for us, to help them learn from either our mistakes or our aha moments or other things that we found were gifts for us during the season, to be able to share that, right?
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, I get to go first, right?
Absolutely, buddy. I'm glad to hear you.
Well, I was going to say is, you know, we all got either Onyx or FATMAPs, and, you know, one of our main things is that we tell people that you need to study it and figure out the land and everything. Well, we did our homework, and we did study it. And we've picked out some good spots. But this year, we found that boots on the ground and visual was probably the best thing that we could have done. Because after we got there, we realized that they had a horrendous wind that blew down tons and tons of trees. So our
forests.
Yeah.
Hey, Gil, can you send me that picture? I always talk about it, and I don't have a visual for anybody.
Y'all can see that right there. That's what you're dealing with, man. I mean, when you want to go over a ridge and you see that in front of you, you can try. Ask Manano, Joe, and Luis. You can try to go over that, and you might hate one another after you go about a quarter of a mile of it, but at the end of the day, that's what it looked like, man.
Mm-hmm. So I guess what I was going to get to and tell everybody –
Russian chipmunk.
Yeah, Russian. All right. Yeah. Is that, you know, it's important that you do that with your Onyx and your fat maps or whatever. But at the same time, I mean, if you've got time to go early and check those places out, you definitely need to put boots on the ground. I mean, it's just one of those things that we found this year was like, whoops, that's not quite the way we thought it would be.
Right.
Yeah. So,
you know, I was thinking about that myself, RC, was it's when you look at a map of an area, everything gets flattened out. Even if you do 3D, you can do 3D, but all of that forestry and everything gets flattened out, and you really don't have an idea what that looks like. And boots on the ground is great, but also here's something that I'm going to share with you. I'm glad you brought this up, RC, and you had no idea, and I had no idea you were going to talk about this. This is really cool. I'm going to share my screen here, and this is just Google Maps, y'all. That's all it is. You can go to Google and go to Google Maps, and you can pull this stuff up, right? Well, in looking at an area like this, if I was to look at this, I really don't have any gist of what that looks like. But something that you can do, and what's great that you can do in Google Maps, and you're not able to do it in every area, but in some places, you can actually add a point to it and see street view. Now, once I do that in street view, I can actually kind of look around exactly and look at the difference of what this looks like right here when I look at that versus when I just go to that 3D view such as this. Totally different. That's
totally different. Wow.
You just don't have the same feel and the same idea. And, you know, you can do that. And what's cool is, yeah, you're not able to do it in every area, but I'm going to show you how you can do that. I'm going to show you how I've got this picture up, and you'll see a little map down here in the corner. And what I can do is I can actually expand this, and it'll show me different places and points that I should be able to get a view from. And what I want to do is I want to try to click on some of these areas that are highlighted, and that lets me get a better idea and a better view of what that area is looking like. Now, yes, is that you getting, you know, is that you getting the opportunity to walk through the woods? Absolutely not. But do I have a better idea?
Absolutely.
Of what that forest looks like when I do that? Absolutely, you do. And you can do this in so many areas just to take a look at what's happening in different places. And it's just one way to actually get a look. And I'll tell you this. Grinders tuning in, thank you for listening to the Blue Collar Elk Hunting Podcast. Our goal is to share our knowledge and help you flatten that learning curve so that you too can have some of the very same incredible experiences that have given all of us here at Elk Bros a lifetime of memories. If you like what you hear or see, you can get all of this information plus so much more from our Basecamp Elk Hunting Training Camp, the first in a series of online courses from our Blue Collar Elk Academy. Our Basecamp Training Camp allows me to use my coaching style and share almost 40 years of elk hunting experiences successfully hunting elk on public lands, as well as over 20 years guiding hunters of all ages and experience levels. This course will be like nothing you have ever experienced in concept and structure, using success-based coaching techniques that will elevate your confidence and skill sets. Our camp will prepare you specifically from that final moment most in your control, those final minutes or seconds the elk is in front of you, backwards through each step and level, allowing you to see, visualize, understand, and relate every coaching point to what lies ahead, the next step, the next thought process, the next success. Because, y'all, you've already been there. You know what it looks like. By tapping my 30 years of teaching and coaching experience, our camps are developed considering multiple learning modes with text, visuals, audio, as well as video. And Basecamp will benefit those new to elk hunting all the way to the 10 to 15 year vet. So if you are looking for that one thing to help you fill that tag this year, invest in the most important piece of equipment there is, you and your elk hunting knowledge. You can find the Blue Collar Elk Hunting Academy and the Base Camp Training Camp at elkbros.com. That's ELKBROS.com. Keep dreaming of the screaming, believing in achieving, and most of all, keep grinding. When I was with this year with our hunt, with our adventures hunt, we had one of our guys that killed out, and it was me driving a road with him, actually bringing his elk out of the mountains when on that actual road, I looked off to the left and there was an area that I could visually see that immediately I went, boom, I'm going to be in there. And I'm checking that area on Onyx and stuff because I had this visual view of what it looked like vertically and what the plants and what the drainage and everything looked like. And it cued me that I was going to find elk in there, and absolutely did when we got in there. So that's just something for you to think about to help you out, because now RC, in that case, I guarantee you that Google picture of this is not. That little car hadn't driven around since those trees got picked.
Yeah, right? For sure. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
it probably didn't go up the mountain either.
on that, Joe, too, is I think a lot of times what we do is we focus on our hunt area, right? And we're uncertain what the shaded relief means and the spacing and the contour lines, Western contours, and the spacing and everything it means. So, you know, actually going into an area, I'm not saying, you know, make an 18-hour drive, but you can go to your local hills, mountains, whatever you have around your place, and open up that Onyx and spend some time with Onyx, base maps, fat maps, whatever it is.
Right.
And look at the contours and look at that shaded relief and look at where you're at and what you're surrounded by. And then when you're going to assess and do your e-scouting, at least you have a better idea, a learned idea of what that represents from that visual that you got in your area, right? So I think that's a big thing. And I think guys overlook spending that time and they go, oh, we're going to go up that ridge. And then they get to that ridge and they go, oh my God, we're going up that ridge.
Right.
You know, so I think spending some time on it pre, you know, learning what it means on there is a big deal.
And we know, man, if you can get boots on the ground, there's nothing that doesn't, nothing I mean, that's where you really get to tie in what you've looked at on all of your maps to what you're seeing there. But if you're not able to, Google Street View, man, gives you an opportunity. Look at that area on your Onyx. Try to imagine what that looks like, and then go look at that street view to start implanting what that terrain and what those trees actually look like. Because when you look on 3D, everything looks the same level. You can't tell where there's higher trees, lower trees, whether that's, you know, big aspen or big lodge pine, or if it's small jacks or if it's scrub oak. Sometimes the color, but it's real difficult because when we looked at that overhead view, those trees look so spaced out. But when you get down on the, you know, with them, it looks a little bit different. So that's just one way. So RC, I'm so glad, dude, that you brought that up.
Yeah. I want to add some stuff before, because I still keep going in and out, and I want to make sure I get something in there.
Yeah.
We had some anxious moments a couple of nights, and that was because the phones were not cooperating. They lost their power. So it's important that you take a power bank with you, you know, if you're going to go out, at least somebody in your group, because communication is real important. And, you know, we lost Gilbert and Larry there for a while, and it was pretty tough on the group. So, you know, it's important that, you know, sometimes if you just take extra batteries, that's good, but everybody seems to be using the phones more often than a GPS. So it's important to have a power bank to keep them charged, you know, let other people know. And, also check your Zoleo. Everybody's got a Zoleo, but nobody seems to be checking to see, what's happening. So that's an important factor too, is you know, to keep in communication with your fellow hunters.
Yeah, redundancy, y'all. backup to your backup, especially when it comes to anything that could be life-threatening. So when you're talking about communications, make sure that you have systems in place for that. And, you know, if you are depending on your phone, you know, make sure that you've got a charging cord, your partner has a charging cord, make sure that
it fits your phone.
Yeah. That fits your phone, and that you've got that additional power bank, man, because you might need that. And understand that going to airplane mode is going to help. Now, I will tell you this. If you're keeping tracking on all the time on some of those, it's going to start to utilize those resources. So, you know, and turn everything else off. Like if you go into airplane mode, it's going to turn off Wi-Fi. It's going to turn, not looking for that. It's not going to eat it up as much.
Well, you got your background apps too, right? There's stuff that continues to run in the background, even with that stuff off.
Yeah. You got to make sure you clear them all out.
You got to get rid of that stuff too.
And then again, like I said, you know, for me, it was just doesn't do you any good to be in your side by side either. It's got to be in your backpack and on you.
Two flashlights. I mean, two headlamps. If you're going to use headlamps, and backup batteries, man, because,
Big deal. Make
sure you have something to light a fire that's going to light a fire, you know?
And I tell you, that's right. I carry a fire starter kit in my backpack, and I was able to do that. And even when it was wet, you guys learn how to dig underneath some of them fallen pines to get to that drier kindling. You dig underneath there, you'll get to the drier stuff. But again, one of the cool things after we went through what we went through, guy came up with an idea of, hey man, look, let's take a two-way radio with us too, you know?
And
if we're going to be hunting in the same area, let's have a check-in time where we check on one another and we can have a, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock, noon, whatever. And, guy and I kind of hunted in the same area as, him and Mike and me and Larry. And that was real easy for us to check in on one another. Well, and for the most part, we have those two-way radios and they work. And, you know, you're within 4 or 5 miles of a guy, you're going to be able to talk to him.
One of the reasons he was saying that too is that when Guy and I went to go look for y'all, fortunately you were on the road by the time we got there. But had you been down in the forest, if you have those two ways so that you can turn them on after hours, you know somebody's going to be looking for you and your party is going to use those two ways to be able to locate you and find out if you're okay. So they can actually be a backup emergency device, right? And the Zoleo has been a great device for that too.
But you got to have your phone to work.
Got to have your phone. Zoleo. You
see, that's where I have an issue with the devices that you cannot message off of directly and you have to utilize your phone.
Okay.
Right? Because heat, cold, they affect the phone. You know, and I'm not going to say any different names, but there's devices where you can either type it in or
for the SOS, the Zoleo still works.
Still
on
works
its own.
For SOS.
Yeah. Right. But in this situation,
the check-ins as well.
Yeah.
Check-in as well.
Phone's dead and their Zoleo's still going, right? We had no way. But if they had, you know, one of the other devices, message could have went straight to that device. That's how me and Joe talked during season.
So what he's saying though is on that Zoleo, you have the opportunity prior to your hunt to set up who your check-ins go to and who will receive an SOS. And when you does the check-in and SOS, it sends your coordinates out as to where your location is. And that works without your phone. There's an SOS button on that device.
There is.
That it comes down to it. You push that, it sends that out and identifies where you're
Calvary out there.
Yeah.
But does that trigger search and rescue as well?
No, it triggers who you want it to.
If you have
the SOS, yes.
Yes.
SOS goes to search and rescue.
Yes, and the check-in goes to the person that...
SOS has whoever you designate as well.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that the check-in doesn't send SOS. It just sends the check-in to the people that you designate.
Right.
But if you hit SOS, search and rescue, and whoever else you designate... Correct. Yeah, that's the last resort right there.
Yes.
I mean, thank goodness that Gil and Larry were smart enough to strip down to their birthday suits and cuddle under one of them logs. Because otherwise, me and Joe would have probably never found them. We saw it at Steam, and there they were.
But the saving grace was us finding that. The saving grace was finding that daggum road, man. And then me staying put, you know.
As soon as Chad brought it up, I saw Gil's face, Joe. I'll never forget his face when we pulled up on him. My heart dropped when Chad brought it up. Good Lord.
Absolutely.
Yeah, look, I mean, I knew that if I stayed by that road, I had a shot, you know, and I knew my boys were going to come. Man, there's no way they're going to leave me out there past midnight. But I knew if I stayed on that road, somebody's going to find me, you know. So it was tough. It was a tough deal to swallow. I'm 53 years old, and
you're getting up there, dude. You're pretty old, man.
Been in the woods a long time, and would have never felt. The only time I felt threatened is when we got in that rock slide, right? And that was very dangerous. And I actually prayed on the side of that mountain, for some strength, you know, and for me not to, because if you lose your cool in a situation like that and panic, you're done.
And so that there in itself is a lesson too, you know, and that's something to think about in all of the different things. Like no matter what, like if you find yourself in an area where you're not sure at the moment, or you get caught after dark and you're not somebody that's used to doing that, the first thing to do is to realize, number one, is there's the only difference between that daytime and that nighttime is the color. Right. Everything else is still the same. Stay relaxed, because you being relaxed and thoughtful about what you do helps you from getting injured. And that's number one. Do not do anything to injure yourself, right?
So and for me, it was not pushing past. I couldn't expend all of my energy in one spot because I kept cramping up, you know, and for me, it was, you know, Larry was doing really good in helping me, as well. Hey, big O, you doing all right? Take as much time as you need. You know, he did a really good job of, it was a tough deal. One that I'm not going to do again.
I think very, very, very important, and it happens to all of us, is especially if you're in camp, is that, you try to prepare. It's just like you said, you know, the backup battery, the backup cords, whatever you need. And you think, well, I'll get that in the morning, or I'll get this after a while, all right? When you think about it, you need to do it because what happens in the morning is it's like, are you going to hunt with me today? Let's go, you know? And so everybody's in a hurry, and then when you get out there, you're going, oh, I didn't bring my man pawn.
Yeah, exactly. That's a bad deal right there. You got your man pawn.
Or as much guff as Joe gives me about me always having my pack on and stuff in my pack, I'm quite proud to hear him say, you got to have X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm different. It's funny, but I'm different in how I pack at different types of the day. If I'm going to be gone all day long, there's certain things I'm going to have in my pack. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to,
I'm a two sandwich day if I'm getting
to eat. Yeah. Yeah. And it can get crazy. Like, you know, if you're going out in the morning and you know, you're not going to have till those afternoon showers, but you got to be ready, man. I mean, there's been times I've just gone light because I've made it. And this is when it happens. You go light and you think, because I'm just going to be out for an hour. Yeah. And then you end up hitting something.
That's
where it turns.
I always carry the essentials in my backpack.
You don't carry anything, bro.
No, I do.
I carry everything.
He carries everything.
Yeah.
Essential for me is just fire, butter cord, water, food, hammock. And a little tarp.
Amateur. Yeah.
Communication battery. But
battery?
It's a tripod. Yeah, tripod to get pictures and a little, you know.
Joe, were you were with us when he was requesting my battery pack because he ran out of battery. Do you remember
that? I remember both you guys having to borrow my lighter. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Yeah, your 99-cent Bic.
My 99.
I didn't need it.
Hey, Gil, so the man pond pack right here, buddy. Wickenworth Gear actually has one.
Look at
like this guy. He sent me this after he saw I cut off the my leg of my base layer, you know, they handle my business. Right. And this thing is loaded, man. Gloves and a bag to pack it out and a wet wipe and a little, little roll of TP there.
Always got it packaged up.
Right. Yeah, man. Nature calls.
Oh, yeah. Nature calls.
So Duplanche, you got the floor now, man. How about, something there for your lessons or your gifts to give to these guys?
Man, you're going to get me all philosophical, bro.
Let's get the 10,000 foot view. You
know, bring it.
Still a lot, right? But, you know, I'll just talk about it in adventure camp, right? I mean, the level of brotherhood and camaraderie and that kinship that just comes from elk hunting in general, but elk hunting, there's something immensely different about what that bond is about, right? And I think a lot of times we focus on, you know, notching that tag, and we lose sight of all the other gifts that the man upstairs has given us as we're progressing through each hour, each day, you know, down this ridge and up the other. And we walk past that stuff. And man, when I was in Elk Bros camp, I'm not even hunting, right? But my heart was just full the whole time, you know, and looking forward to hearing everybody's stories at the end of the day, you know, and then between me and Gil in that Cadillac of a side by side on that 45 minute drive back from that area we were hunting, man, just laughing and goofing all the whole time. And it's 30 degrees. And, you know, I can't get past that stuff to look at anything. I mean, I can, right? I criticize myself enough with my elk hunting, but those are the things, man, that just stand out to me. We talk about gifts, you know, it just don't walk past that stuff. You know, everybody says stop and smell the roses, man, that rose is with every single step.
Yeah. I 100% agree with Guy. Our hearts were full, man. Those are the gifts that we made bonds with guys that are in camp that I still, you know, talk to today, every day. I mean, just about every day, one of them will reach out or we'll, you know, bump each other on WhatsApp or something like that, you know.
Is that still going?
Yeah. it's been wild. I mean, you know, I hear from Larry, Tom, Adam, I hear from them all. So it's, and then, you know, of course our brotherhood that we have, it just keeps us stronger every day. So yeah, that's a huge gift, man. Being able to hunt with Guy and learn from him and learn from all the guys that are in camp, man, and be able to share those things. Those are two of the proudest things that I take away from.
There's three of our brothers not with us tonight that I actually, was hoping they could be here, but you know, other things get in the way of that sometimes. You know, we don't have Cole Wilkes here with us. Cole is a workaholic, man. And this guy, he's just amazing at the stuff he does. And, he's working tonight. Eric Aragon, our Ridge Runner. Those two fellas are phenomenal human beings, incredible elk hunters, incredible teachers. And another of our brother, our northern brother, who we're going to be hunting with. And people, everybody keeps asking us about where we're going to be hunting next year. We're going to be in New Mexico or we're going to be in Colorado. Well, y'all, it's going to be a Can-Am hunt. We're going to be up in Canada next year. So, we don't have Travis O'Shea with us tonight. Travis is actually out, on a gas compressor for the next week, in the 2 hours in the middle of nowhere up in Canada. So, So I want to wish those three, our three brothers, Merry Christmas as well.
Christmas.
I wish you guys are with us tonight because they have a ton to share. I mean, the things that they did, you know, most people, Eric and Cole are Hunt Wars coaches that have been working with the Hunt Wars competition the last 2 years. Both these guys, I mean, Cole went up into Utah in a hunt unit that, people struggle to even find elk, and on day one gets it done with a beautiful bull up there. And Eric, true to Eric's form, has been working with another guy out of state and brought him in, and they did all kinds of coaching, went into a unit in here in New Mexico. And not only did the guy's coaching take a beautiful bull, but Eric was like, okay, you got the bull, I'm taking the cow, and boom, he pops the cow there. So they were hauling two elk out of the mountain, man. So, and Travis, man, Travis had multiple people that he called bulls in for, and everybody, these guys are just so successful. They're such good elk hunters, and they have the passion, and they're just great human beings. And those are the type of people that we want associated with us. And I tell you, we've got another fellow that's going to probably be working his way in here, and he hasn't heard me say this in a long time or there, but y'all, man, the kid who was with us this year was definitely Elk Bros material, Cody the Kid. So he's somebody that we're going to be developing and working to bring. And you know, we got another fellow over in the Quest area too, Richard over there. We've got great people that we are developing that we're bringing into fold of this. It'll end up being Elk Bros coaches and spreading their wisdom and their knowledge to other people. So there's more to come on all of that, right?
Absolutely.
So, we'll see when that happens. Luis, what you got, man?
Yeah, man. I originally was actually gonna touch on the safety. You know, was gonna talk about the time where Manano and I got separated in the downfall, and you know, I was scared. I was scared for a while because I got to the road and I couldn't find Manano. I kept calling, I couldn't hear him, and then just the ugliest and thoughts that I'd never thought I would think about went through my head, and I freaked out.
Now, wait a second, bro.
The thing is, he realized that he loved me.
Wait a second.
He just realized didn't he?
Right. I have a problem. I was with y'all. You never worried about me, bro.
No, that was a different time.
That was a different time, because even then, we were relatively close and could still hear each other. But, on this other hunt, we ended up crossing each other. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I was going to touch on the whole safety thing, you know, really have a conversation if you're going to get separated, really have a plan on how to communicate, you know, and you guys touched and all that. And then, you know, going to guys' philosophical portion of things, you know, I agree 100%, you know, I think based on that, I'm kind of changing my message, and it's more about being thankful of the gift as opposed to giving the gift. Because I think that, you know, those mountains have a special effect on me every year. Every time I get out there, I don't know what it is, but it reaches in a certain part of my soul that it kind of stays untouched throughout the most of the year. But for some reason, that it touches that area in my soul that is just not normally, you know, where that doesn't normally resonate. I don't even know how to explain it, but I get way more sensitive.
Yeah, it's that challenge. Yeah, it's that challenge that you challenge yourself with.
It's the humility. Yeah. It's the camaraderie. It's the friendship. It's just that realizing how, you know, humbling the mountains make you feel, how vulnerable, they make you feel. And those emotions just come out, right? And being able to sit down and take it all in, like you said, you know, stop and smell the roses. I heard Chaff say that a long time ago, and it made total sense. You know, I live a very stressful, rushed type life. The type of business I do is 24/7, very stressful. And sometimes we forget, that life is about taking it in and being appreciative, being thankful, for all the things that we have. For the mountains are the gift. For the experiences are the gift. For our friendship and the opportunities that we have
in this country that not every country has that, you know, that opportunity for their people to have beautiful sceneries and mountains for us to go hunt in and be able to harvest their own food and have those experiences. I mean, we just have so much to be thankful for. And I think bringing that to like front and forward as part of the experience of those trips, it's something that we have to do every time because that's where the value is. That's where the beauty is.
Yep. That's where the life changes at, man.
Yeah, man. Changed my life forever, you know, 13 mm-hmm. years ago.
Yeah, I think, well, and we've all talked about that life altering. That was actually a podcast that we had on that.
Yes, sir.
On there. And I think that reverberates, keeps coming back because it is a big part of what we do. It is a reason that we all, it's weird, man. You cannot see each other for a year and you show up at elk camp. I mean,
look, I'm going to tell you, I think all our Elk Bros adventure hunters that were in camp with us will resonate that same sentiment too. Their lives are changed, man. Sure, yeah. And I feel like, yeah, killing elk and harvesting elk and bulls and all of those things are awesome. But when you help change people's lives, Joe, we're doing the right thing.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, absolutely. And that just comes from, you know, I think one thing about this, about elk hunting, and you were talking about that guy, I think the reason that it pulls people together is that the mountains don't care if you succeed. Them animals don't care if you succeed. You know, there is no enabling out there. You know, it's either you do or you don't.
You don't.
And in that journey and that battle and that fight and that, competition, you know, there's no cheating, you know, on that. And I think it's just like, you know, I have athletes that have that same respect for each other because they all go through the same thing. And when you have to depend on other people to have your back in something that can be life threatening, you know, there's special trust and a special bond with that. Cool. You know, does that mean that everything's going to be kumbaya and you're going to love everything those people around you do? Mm-mm. No, it ain't. What you do is you find the best that you can and you work with that and you help develop the rest. It's communication, just like those microphones are out there, man. I'm one of those that I don't hold on to crap. I got an issue. You're going to hear it from me, you know, but I do it in a way that we try to build and be constructive, with what we're doing because this is our crew. So, we're going to do.
Yeah. I think Joe, we all share the same sentiment. When one lets us down, everybody, we're letting everybody down, you know?
Oh yeah.
And I felt that way, you know, when I was sitting there on the side of that mountain, y'all come driving up at midnight. I felt like I let everybody down. And, at the end of the day, I did because I wasn't prepared for what was coming. Man. So at the end of the day, they'll drive me forever in my life. I got, you know, I'm looking at my pack right now. It's got two battery packs in it. It's got two cords in it. You know, I mean, all the redundancy, even I'm whitetail hunting. I could walk back to my camp. You know what I mean? But let's say I get hit by a rattlesnake. Right? Yeah. Let's say I get hit by a rattlesnake, or let's say I fall from a tree, or, you know,
out of a blind.
Anything, man. Yeah. I fell out of a chair in Luis's deal. Now look, you know, something as simple as falling out of a chair, I could have hurt my back really bad. Couldn't have got up and crawled anywhere. You know, right. There's just so many things that, you know, I was with a very good friend of Luis and Manano's last week. In Midland when I was working out there, and he takes his daughters hunting with him. And I'm like, let me ask you a question, brother. I did this with my kids. If you got hurt when you were with one of your daughters at 6 or 7 years old, how are they going to get you help?
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Can they run your cell phone? Can they give directions? I mean, in your notes, you should put vivid directions that they could read to somebody that could get you some help, right? If you get hit by a rattlesnake, if you fall and break your leg. I mean, there's all kinds. Man, he was like, his eyes were that big around, and he's like, man, don't say this in front of my wife, dude. You know? They're like, he's like, daggone, bro.
We talk about it. Luis and I last week.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So.
Manano, how about you, bro?
Well, I've got many things, yo. Especially from
sinus is one of them.
From this weekend,
the Vaporoo.
I got slapped in the face. I've been dreaming about it after I shot a decent deer in what I believed I was, you know, pretty accurate on the spot, and we searched for that deer for even, I don't know, Beto.
It was 6 miles.
Yeah, I mean,
deer traveled 6 miles.
Yeah, with dogs.
Those dogs ran that deer 6 miles.
And it shocked me because, I spent 2 years hunting in public land, wounded, I don't know how many animals, and I learned the lesson, and I always bother Luis saying, Luis, I always kill my animals close to the road, and they just made just few steps and you know, like, it's karma. Karma, it's a, yeah. And yeah, man, that's, in bow hunting, it's a serious thing, man. So
what's the lesson, bro?
The lesson
in patience
and humility, man.
Yeah.
And humility. That's humility. My point, because I was, you know,
these guys are killers, man. These guys are master archers and really good shots.
You always got to work your craft, and you got to understand that things can happen. You do the best you can and nothing is a for sure. So you got to be your best.
Yes, Joe, but I went back and I reviewed my video, and that shot was, I would say, even less than an inch.
But that's my point, that's what I'm trying to say is, and I tell this to other people is, you know, I've had people beat themselves up over stuff, but the fact is that you can do everything right. And it can still go wrong. But our job as hunters, is to work to be as efficient and as accurate as possible. That's all we can do. And that's where the humility comes in. You can't get to the point where you just, you know, I got this, you know?
No, you don't. No.
Yeah. And to your point,
it hits you in the face like a crappy.
Right.
To your point, Joe, I think what you said is very important, because I know in my early years, not too long ago, when we were hunting, you know, and I went through those, you know, bad experiences of shot placement, not finding the animals and all that stuff. It really tore me up, you know, and to the point to where I believe I was close to saying, this just isn't for me. I can't, you know, keep doing this. Right. And your words were like, pick yourself up. You know, learn from it, move on, right? I mean, so, as bow hunters, we have to understand that we're going to have those moments, and we have to be physically and mentally prepared to accept them and to make the best out of those moments. We're not going to avoid them. It's impossible to avoid those moments. They're going to take place, but our jobs, as you mentioned, is that we continue to strive. We continue to learn. And we continue to improve to minimize those moments from happening.
No matter what your choice of weapon is, bro.
Yeah, man.
I mean, first and foremost in that, you got to care about it, too.
Absolutely.
You got to care about it.
So we're all coaches here, right? We've all played a game, right? We all play the game, whether it be athletics or hunting, okay? There are so many things that are uncontrollable for us, right? The only thing you can't control are the controllables. Winning and losing, being successful or not, you can't control winning and losing. That's just part of the game. What we can do is affect our attitude and our effort and be willing to go the very long road that it takes to endure when we have made a mistake, right? Or when we haven't made that perfect shot. We work our tails off every day to make sure that we're making that ethical shot. But winning and losing, we can't control. How we play the game and how we have our attitude set, that's the only thing that we can control. We can make our best shot that we thought we made and we don't recover an animal. We can make a pretty bad shot sometimes and all of a sudden we hit the right artery and we walk up on the animal. It's the same thing.
100%. 100%.
It's the same thing with winning. And there's no difference in a rifle shot. I've seen guys blow the legs off a dadgum deer, think they hit him in the pump station, and I'm like, oh man, that was low, and we liable to be chasing this deer for 2 days, you know?
That's one thing about bow hunting, man, is it's intimate. We see it up close, and we have a whole different experience where, you know, a lot of that, it can happen, you know, guys are shooting a longer distance with a rifle and think they absolutely missed an animal, you know? I mean, and
hit him stone dead.
So, yeah.
So, just this weekend, I'm at my deer camp. One of our guys comes in and he goes, Gil, I shot a deer. Man, I'm pretty dang sure I hit it. I found some blood, but I can't find him. He said, would you go down there with me? I said, sure. I'll go down there. Man, the deer's 40 yards from where he shot him. But he walked right by him three times because he thought the deer went left. Deer went right. You know, I found a little spot where he went up on the side of a. He goes, well, how did you know to look that way? I said, well, there ain't no blood this way. You know what I mean? My sense of philosophy said, well, the deer probably went this way when I shined the light up. Bingo, you know? And he said, well, I walked around that sucker for 5 minutes. He said, there's no way I couldn't have seen him. I said, well, that yonder he is right there. I said, I don't know what to tell you. And then he shot at another deer, didn't get any blood, none. I said, well, that don't mean you didn't hit him.
Right.
I said, a lot of these rounds go in there, poke a hole back. We don't get much. And if it didn't get through him, you ain't going to get much.
Yep.
Again, right type of bullets, right type of shot placement. It's imperative, guys.
Do the best you can to prepare. Patience,
to make the best shot and make the best shot placement. And if you're having to rush at all, man, it's time to take some time.
So, what I'd like to do is on my part here, I'm going to try to give you guys some nuggets of things that I've observed and things that really stuck in my head during the season here. And hopefully these can help you. The first one was on hunt efficiency. And I call this don't follow or chase the rainbow when hunting elk. And what I mean by that is sometimes we end up in a situation where we are chasing that pot of gold, that animal or that situation that just is keeps staying out of reach because we're not reading the situation right or because, that animal, I'm burning time because it's a lost cause. Either I have an elk between me, and there's another target bull there that I think will get spooked. And so, I just end up locked up because I don't want to blow that animal out. Right. So I end up locked up, even though my target animal is on the opposite side, and I end up burning daylight because I'm worried that this animal is going to blow out and spook everything. You know, no. You know, in that situation, depending on how it is, especially if it's not visual, sometimes you got to blow up an animal to get to a situation. And you can cover it by giving it, you know, giving some calls like maybe if it was a young bull, it was another bull that spooked that bull out, right? There's things
to
do for that, right? Let's say you have a hung bull with cows moving away, you know. You got to read that situation and understand that you're burning daylight by staying in that position right there, working that animal that's actually leaving, right? So you have to make some decisions on that. Let's say that you have multiple bulls bugling, but it's a losing situation because of wind, thermals, barriers, or no other bulls in the area, no other competition that you can pull, because sometimes that herd bull's the toughest one to pull off, especially when they're in a situation. And this happened to us this year where you could hear bulls down on private property and you got a fence line there. And even, I mean, it's like that rainbow, man. It's that pot of gold. You can friggin' see that rainbow. We can hear those bulls down there and they make you just stay there and, you know, wishing they're going to come to you, but wishing ain't going to get it done. So the efficiency of that is actually hurting you. Sometimes you got to call it and put yourself in a better situation. Okay. Also, don't be hanging with a bull that you don't, or an animal that you don't plan on shooting in the first place, man. And, I mean, there's sometimes you're sitting there arguing with yourself on what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. You got to have that made up, right? Yeah. And if that ain't going
to
happen,
be happening before we get in the woods.
Yeah, you need to move on from that and put yourself in a better situation, you know. And the other one, like, is if you're racing shooting light. If you're racing shooting light and those animals there, and again, that's that pot of gold, man. It just keeps staying further and further, and you're not quite getting there. You can't quite get your hand on that pot of gold because that light's fading. Sometimes it's best just to stop, pull back, put it on your GPS, get out of there, and come back after them boogers in the morning. So, and I would say, as far as hunting fishing, the other one is hunt the hunt every day like it's your first day. Man, there are so many people that get, but they're pumped the first day, they're pumped the second day, they hit hump day on the third day, and they just, man, they start, you know, because things aren't going their way, they get in a situation where they're no longer focused, they're not walking with the same walk, they're not giving it the same ability, and you'll notice that a lot of people kill on the last day of their hunt. And I think a lot of that happens because it's the last day. They're giving it everything that they have, man. Right.
I was going to say, when you said the first hunt, like you're hunting on the first day, I was thinking, no, I want to hunt every day like I'm hunting like the last day. Because that's our mentality, right? We're hitting it hard every friggin' day. I mean, even the last day, we're still out there grinding, right?
But you know, there's some people, though, that never make it to that last day, right? Yeah, I mean, and I've seen people that have left. And then they get all pumped back again. They've lost out on 3 or 4 days and they go back and they're excited on that first day, which would have been their like seventh day, right? You know, but they've missed those other, and yeah, there's times you need to take a break. Well, shoot, man, you can sit water, you can sit a trail, there's things that you can do to still be in the woods because you don't kill animals from the camp. Right? Yeah. So.
Right.
That's the thing that I want to tell you on hunt efficiency. And the other thing is efficiency with your encounters, right? And what I mean by that is there's different ways I carry things, how I carry my calls. It makes me more efficient. Well, you have an animal all of a sudden that you see and you're looking and you're like, where's my call? Where's my call? And you're trying to get it in your mouth and make it happen. You grab the wrong call.
Kind of like Joe trying to knock an arrow to kill a hog.
You know what? And he is absolutely right, man, because when I went to that nuclear bow and now I went from, you know, just putting an arrow on a rest, pulling back and shooting, now I had to hook this thing.
Relearn the system.
I had to relearn the system, man. Yep. I put it down on a flipper and I got to flip that up with my thumb. And I'm watching all of this instead of watching that animal, and it just screwed with me. So the point he's making is exactly what I'm saying with that. Right. And in fact, that brings me to something that I know has happened to people out there. How many of you guys have gone to put an arrow on and flip up that rest in a hot situation and had your arrow jammed between the rest and your riser? How many have had that happen, man? So
I haven't had that one happen yet, but I'm sure it will.
So
Manana shot a tree that way.
It happened to me
instead of an elk.
Yeah. So what I'm saying, man, is that's something that hurts your efficiency because you only get so many encounters, right?
Yes.
And you've got to capitalize on those encounters. So what I'm telling you right now is I'm telling you things. I'm giving you a heads up on some stuff, right? And like, if you have a situation where that arrow can get and jam between your rest, I believe I'm going to find something to put on my riser so that doesn't happen. I'm figuring that puppy out because it's going to happen when you least expect it, right? And you've got to get that system down. Now, this year, man, I, you know, it's like the first time I hunted, one time I had an animal coming in and instead of drawing early because I'm used to my old bow system, I could have been drawn way ahead of time and holding on the animal like Gil was talking about and been way more efficient, right? Like when I carry my calls, you know, I have calls that stay inside quivers on my hat. You know, so they're already there and that is, I mean, that's, yeah, or it's in my mouth. I'm telling you, if I'm in a tight situation, it's in my mouth already. But what if I'm moving and all of a sudden I spot when I need a call? I don't want to be looking for that. I'm going to pull it, get it in, and I'm going. Then I carry with me because I always have my go-to call on my hat. On my hat is my go-to call. And that's going to get in my mouth and it's not getting saliva on it the whole time. So it's a little.
Joe, I think a lot of what you're talking about, you know, and Beto is probably the best person to talk about this. It's mechanics. And I think that, catchers, train a lot on mechanics because they have to be efficient as far as, you know, taking the ball, turning, getting in position to throw the ball, whether, you know, to any of the bases and stuff like that. So it's really practicing the mechanics to where you're not and losing not time or energy.
Not only the mechanics, but being prepared before the situation happens and then the mechanics come into play. Right. So, you know, it's like when to knock an arrow. People are like, well, when do I knock an arrow? Well, y'all, look, when you feel, when you believe in a possible encounter, if you're doing a scenario, if you're taking a break, if you're napping on the ground, I have an arrow knocked, man. As soon as anything tells me that there's a possibility of an encounter, I'm knocking an arrow. I'm not waiting for the encounter to happen and then having to knock an arrow.
Or when to draw.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly it. And what I used to tell my athletes is don't get caught watching the game.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, if you want to watch the game, we'll get you a bag of popcorn and a Coke. Yeah. Otherwise, let's play.
If I have an elk moving in on me, I'm not watching the game. As soon as I realize the animal's coming in, I'm looking at body. I'm looking at all the possible shooting lanes. Do I need to move? What's around me? If I draw, what's on the ground? I'm checking my
situation. Ranging, mental distances, all that comes to mind.
Well, I tell you what, that's the other thing, man. I am able to judge 30 yards in. At 30 yards, I don't need a friggin' rangefinder. I'm going to kill that animal there. So, you know, that's what's going to happen with that. So, that's what I'm talking about.
I had one other thing, Joe, to take away to give to our listeners. Everybody knew we had some trouble on the side of the mountain. My bow got beat up pretty bad. Okay. And I had said when I got back to camp that night that I need to shoot my bow, right? Well, we got caught up telling the stories and everything. We decided we're going to go out and hunt that afternoon. I forgot all about shooting my bow or that next morning. The next morning I get up and I've got a mule deer tag in my pocket. And the elusive New Mexico mule deer has one-upped me for a long time. I get a mule, 160-inch mule deer inside of 50 yards, okay, 53 yards. Listen, guys, I shoot 50, 60 yards like it ain't nothing, right? I mean, it's a dead animal if they 60 yards from me. I drew my bow back, settled that pin, shot. It went 8 inches over his back. I went, what in the – and it went straight over his withers, but 8 inches high, man. I'm like, what in the world was that? I'm like – did I use my wrong pen? So I came back to camp after, you know, eating a little bit of tag soup and came back to camp and shot my bow. I shot over the target, shooting at the dead center target at 50 yards, shot over the target the first time. That climb and that rough hike had knocked my bow sight off and it just messed with the elevation. Didn't mess with the windage left or right, but it messed with the elevation. And I found out why. And it didn't. There's two different screws on my sight that'll lock something down and not let it dial up on the other side. Well, as you're going through brush, it's dialing that dial the whole time when you're going forward, right? If you don't have the bottom screw locked down where it can't use the up and down set screw. Yeah. So I finally figured that out. Why? And it's been doing it to me all year. And I'm like, man, why is this thing doing this thing? So finally I went over and called my trusty boys over at Texas Archery, Richard and Joey, and they told me about that set screw, and they said, man, you got to clamp that thing way down when you're going to be hiking.
You can put bow wax on those things too.
Yeah, and at the end of the, like I said, at the end of the day, it was just something that I went through. But you got, when you go through something like that, shoot your bow the next morning. You know, like Joe and them carry a blunt with them, right, or a judo point. Make sure you're shooting, and that your equipment, after you beat it around a bunch, you take a rough ride in a side by side, and your equipment got beat up. Go shoot your bow.
I want to ask y'all, because I don't know if it came across. Did you understand what I meant by not for hunt efficiency, not chasing the rainbow? Did that come across?
For sure.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure, because there's some things that you got to call and say, that's a losing thing. I'm going to move on to something that's more winning situation.
Oh, yeah.
So that's something I want to do for that. Real. Probably the last thing I would tell as a nugget out there is that I love to call, but guys, you got to know, you know, when you have an animal coming in, when to shut up.
Less is more sometimes.
Sometimes it's better to be quiet and let them think you're another elk than to keep calling and remove all doubt. It does sound familiar, right? Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. That's something else, man. Loud and far calling is not always necessary. And we've already talked about low vocal noises like that. So that's pretty much my nuggets there, on that. And I think there were a lot of cool things tonight, because there were a lot of areas covered, both, you know, for the animal, for elk hunting, for our philosophy, our feelings on this. And, you know, what we're sharing is as much of a gift as we can give y'all.
You know, all of these gifts that, or nuggets that we received, muffs, I mean, all of the things that we talked about in the intro definitely are something that we want to relay back to our listeners. I mean, hopefully it can keep them from having one of these issues or, you know, in a dire situation, you know.
Well, it's going to keep their head up. It's not going to keep them from having the issue. Don't make that claim. It'd be
and understand that. And when things do go wrong, don't dwell on it, man. Learn from it. Move on. Go to the
memory.
Next play.
Short memory. Okay?
Yeah. I think that's what we all are as coaches, and that's what I was going to tell Manano. I wouldn't hesitate if you wanted to go hunt tomorrow and you invited me. I wouldn't hesitate one bit, because you know what works and what doesn't work.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's like, as coaches, we're constantly learning from each other, from our experiences, and you can't, it's invaluable. I mean, you know, it's just one of those things.
Right.
I know it just takes a little longer, but he gets there. But...
well, with this one was close call, that's why it shocked me.
Yeah.
It was a good shot.
Always good to have our crew together here during the Christmas holidays. This podcast will come out after the Christmas holidays. So, Joe, I want to wish all of you guys a safe and Merry Christmas. I can't wait to get you guys down here to somewhere here in Texas or Oklahoma where we can go chase some pigs together and stuff like that. It'll be happening pretty soon, I'm pretty sure. These guys are got a pretty cool place set up down there, so we'll get at that. Get it there pretty quick.
Looking forward
a little bit
to
of a mice issue, but we'll fix it.
They don't eat much.
It's around there. Joining us.
Yeah, for sure. Guys, if you like what we're doing, please subscribe, rate, and review us. You got to go to Apple Podcasts or iTunes to review. You can check out more elk hunting content at elkbros.com. Just a reminder, if any of our listeners would like their questions answered on our show, just send your questions to info@elkbros.com. That's info@elkbros.com. And like we say down here in the Lone Star State, husbands, kiss your wives. Wives, kiss your husbands. Hug your babies. Keep your broadhead sharp and your powder dry. And we'll see you next week right here on Blue Collar Elk Hunting. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
And for all our grinders out there, here's some more music from our brother Tony Wintrip to close out our show.
Merry Christmas, guys. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad.
Take a good look at me. I'll be gone for a while in the back country, where peace of mind is destiny. I hit the trail with a pack on my back, mountain house meals in a bivy sack. I'm gone for a while, baby. Take a good look at me. You and you'll be missing me. When you lay your head down at night, just know your daddy's safe in the bright moonlight. September sky, as far as the eye can see. See the mountaintop with the highest peak and no backdrop. It's a long way up from here and a long way down to my